You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Football Social Daily. Premier League updates.
Hello, welcome to Football Social Daily. It's a Monday, which means it's another week to look forward to in the world of the Premier League, the best league in the world. And you can subscribe to the podcast so you never miss another episode. Through the week, we'll be giving you daily news updates on the Premier League. It's a really quick way to get all the news from your club and around the league. And at the weekends, we'll have Premier League review and preview shows. And of course, there's been no Premier League football this weekend. We've missed it because it's been the international break. I'm Niall McCorn. Alongside me in the studio, we have Marley Anderson. Hello, Marley.
Hello.
And we've also got Jim Salveson.
Hello.
So, what do footballers do in the international break when they're not playing for their country? What would you do if you had a couple of weeks off, Jim?
Get in a scrap.
Yeah.
Get pissed. Get in a scrap.
Yeah. Get beaten up. Not nice to see photos of a professional footballer in a bad way in terms of Danny Drinkwater, who you referred to there. Mm. He got assaulted outside a nightclub, supposedly. We don't know the full story, but certainly reports have claimed that the reason he missed Burnley's game last weekend due to an ankle injury is because he ended up chatting up someone's girlfriend who also happened to be a professional footballer. Scunthorpe United player Kahosi Nclere was out in Manchester as well, and his girlfriend was there, and Danny Drinkwater supposedly tried to chat the girlfriend up, got told to basically do one, and then as he left the club was supposedly assaulted by six men who beat him up quite badly and then hit him in the legs, trying to break his ankles. These are all rumours and reports.
It's
we don't know exactly
story.
What happened, but it doesn't make for nice reading.
You have to bear in mind it is being reported by the tabloid newspapers, so you don't know how much truth is in anything at the moment. But what does seem clear is...
There's a few pictures, though.
Yeah, exactly. And he clearly has got in a scrap at some point
from
pictures that he's posted himself of looking a little bit bruised and battered by the whole thing. So something's gone on. We don't know exactly what, and we don't know who's at fault for doing what, but yeah, something's gone on there.
Yeah, he's not had a good couple of years, has he, Danny Drinkwater?
No.
He sat on the bench for a year and he comes back, he finally starts playing and somebody sets upon his ankles for him being a bit of a divvy in a pub or a bar, whatever it was. But, you know, you've got to be careful. You're a target if you're a footballer,
right? That's exactly it. I think you've got to be careful, and not using Danny Drinkwater as an example for this in any way at all, just generalising. If you're a footballer, why do you put yourself in a situation...
You're already in the public eye, aren't you?
When you might cause problems. And we've seen it countless times with CCTV in bars showing punches being thrown and all these things before. If you're a footballer and you're in public eye, A, don't put yourself in that situation where you're at risk and you're a target, whether it's a target from other people or whether it's a target from women who want to sell stories to the newspaper, whatever
so
it is, avoid the risk.
I remember when Jack Wilshere got hammered in the newspapers for having a fag on a night out. You know, then that caused a big stir. You know, he's a professional, shouldn't be smoking. Of course, it was in the Arsene Wenger days of Arsenal, even though Wenger used to smoke on the touchline. He used to smoke like 20 fags on the touchline. But in terms of what footballers should be and shouldn't be allowed to do, they are still human beings. And we've got to remember that everyone likes a night out from time to time, or at least most people do. These footballers are the same. They're the exact same. But like you say, Jim, it's just how you conduct yourself and how you go about your day-to-day life as well as that.
Completely. And you've got a responsibility as well as a player for a football club, just as any employee of any company or brand has. You have a responsibility to represent that company, whether you're in work or not. And if you're a significant person, like, if one of us went out and got in a fight,
we wouldn't be a target for any women if we went to that club, would you?
No, this is true. But if it appeared in a newspaper and you're showing up your company in an unfavourable light, you'd accept the repercussions of that, and those repercussions would probably be being handed your P45.
Yeah, definitely.
Footballers should expect the same.
Well, there's been talk of his loan getting cut short with Sean Dyche. She's apparently in talks today or something like that. Yeah. So
there's meant to be a meeting today.
Might get his loan cut short and cut the losses on him. But I can't see that happening, to be fair. I don't think they'll do that.
I think it's important we should say, though, that although, you know, maybe there is an element of responsibility on Drinkwater's part to behave in a more appropriate manner, we cannot condone him being attacked by six guys or however many guys it was. No one should be assaulted like that
in
any circumstance, especially hit with blunt objects on his ankles trying to break his legs. You know, it's awful to hear that that's what's happened to him. And Marley, you said about his decline since Leicester. He joined Chelsea and that has just been downhill for him since there, really.
He was such a good player for Leicester as well. When him and Vardy
teamed up for that title-winning team and everything. Yeah. It was Drinkwater playing everything in behind, Vardy running off, and him and Mahrez just tearing them up, basically, wasn't it? So
you see it so often, don't you, with players who take that step up, inverted commas, and it just never quite works out. And particularly if you go to Chelsea, it seems to be like Steve Sidwell, for example, he had a brilliant season.
Chelsea's best number nine in the last 10 years.
And then just kind of vanished into...
It was a strange sign-in for Chelsea. I thought Chelsea sign-ins that summer were abysmal. Antonio Conte just lost the plot. Mm. He won the league the season before. Then he signed like Zappa Costa, Bakayoko, Drinkwater. He signed a few other players as well. And none of them really.
Was that the year he got Morata as well?
Yeah, maybe. I'm not sure. But none of them really were any good. And you know, so that was just a bit of a strange one. I mean, if you're Danny Drinkwater, you don't turn a move to Chelsea down, I don't think. Chance to increase your salary. You've just won the Premier League with Leicester, et cetera, et cetera. You don't. And I think he still lives in the north, if I'm right, thinking Danny Drinkwater still lives in Cheshire. So.
No player's going to take, when they're offered that big contract and that big move, as a professional sportsman of any kind, you have to back yourself in that situation and go, yeah, I can do this, I can make this step up. So there's no blame towards Drinkwater at all.
You've got to have like a mentality upgrade as well. Like when you go to a big club, I think if you look at the players that left Leicester, so you look at Kante, he went to Chelsea. You look at Drinkwater and he went to Chelsea. Kante was like, right, I'm here now and I am going to be the best player at this club and one of the best in my position in the world. There's no reason why Danny Drinkwater couldn't have done the same. I just don't think he has the sort of mentality. Like he sort of seems happy with like, right, my career's peaked at Leicester. I've won the Premier League. Mm. And he went to Chelsea and he just didn't seem the same, had that same hungry mentality of what he wanted.
12 Premier League appearances since he left Leicester.
Well, that's it. The very fact he's been happy to. So was that three seasons ago?
Yeah, Leicester won it in May 2016.
So three full seasons, 12 appearances. That shows that mentality, doesn't it? Because most footballers, I'd like to think, if you're in that situation and you come to terms with the fact you aren't going to get game time, you'd look for that move elsewhere.
Yep.
You'd want to play football, but obviously he doesn't fall into that category.
Yeah, I mean, Mahrez has done the same. Mahrez has gone on to play for City and, you know, have that mentality of like, right, okay, I'm a top player now, I'm going to make appearances. He's not making that many appearances for City, but he still does a job when he's on the pitch. When he gets his chance, he doesn't let the side down. But Drinkwater, he just seems a little bit different. He doesn't really fancy it all the time, which is a bit of a shame. Because.
But as you say, Noel, whatever the provocation that has happened or whatever the argument that's taken place, there's absolutely no excuse for that kind of behaviour. I think no sensible person is going to endorse that.
It's
a scumbaggy way to behave.
Yeah, if he got lumped by someone up, like there's no
and the thing is
excuse for that either.
Yeah, you've talked to my girlfriend and go break your leg. They don't equate to each other. Yeah.
If the Scunthorpe player Cahosi and Clare had punched Drinkwater in the face and caused Drinkwater that damage, there would have been uproar, and I think he probably would have lost his job at Scunthorpe as
that
well.
That would have been an FA Cup tie in future, wouldn't it? Imagine that. Imagine watching that.
Those two going at
but
it.
But as you say, pinch of salt stuff, because as you pointed out earlier when we were talking about this, Niall, if the Scunthorpe player isn't going to sell your newspaper. No. If you've got Danny Drinkwater yeah. on the back page or the front page, that's
going to
sell your
newspaper. No offence to Cahosi and Clare, who's been reliable at League 1 and League 2 level. I've watched a fair amount of those divisions over the last few years. No one knows who he is, really. Everyone seems to know who Danny Drinkwater is. And like you say, Jim sells papers. Marley, you mentioned about a meeting between Dyche and Drinkwater, which has supposedly happened today on Monday, about his future. Chelsea obviously are going to be involved in that meeting in some capacity. You'd think, well, I mean, what do you do as a football club in this situation? What does Dyche say to him? I mean, how do you deal with the situation from a management perspective? Because obviously they've brought him in on loan and trying to get him in to improve their team. What do you do now in this situation?
Well, there's two sides to every story, isn't there, I suppose. There won't be any CCTV of the footage, I wouldn't think. If you were six lads beating someone up, you wouldn't do it in a place where there's cameras, so it's more like...
You're suggesting a big level of thought that would have gone into this in some way. I'm not sure that kind of...
You sound like you've done this before, Marley.
I've been part of this.
Where were you on Saturday night?
Basically, if Danny Drinkwater's loan gets cut short, he doesn't play football for the next season because he's out of Chelsea's Premier League squad until they get to reassign it in January. Yeah. So really, it's either stay or just don't play for another 6 months.
If Danny Drinkwater was a significant player, if Sean Dyche considered him to be instrumental in their title, in whatever challenge it is they're putting forward, whether it's top six or top ten or whatever it is this season, if he was considered a key player, there'd be no question. It wouldn't even be a discussion. But potentially...
What, that he would be sacked?
Yeah,
it would be.
They might pay a bit of lip service to it, and it might be... something, oh, we're going to have this big showdown talks. But at the end of the day, if that player is considered valuable to the team,
yeah,
then they'll be let off, I suppose, would be the right phrase. If Burnley now see this as an opportunity to cut short a loan that they don't think's working, after 4 weeks of the season, they would have seen him in training, they would have seen him gelling with the other team. If they are thinking now, we've made a mistake here, this is costing us £4 million to pick a number out of the sky, loan fee, actually, we can get out of this. This is a reason to cancel it and move on. Then they'll take that opportunity now. So I think that'll be quite telling.
I think they'll keep him because if you were going to have a manager that was going to say these things happen, I think it'd be Sean Dyche.
Sean Dyche. Quite good with these things.
Yeah,
Sean
no
Dyche.
Nonsense. He knows, you know, I bet you any money Sean Dyche has done some things in his time that, you know, some big lad comes at Sean Dyche in a pub, you're getting knocked out and there's no, you know, back in the 80s, big, tough centre half like he was. I just think he'll give him another chance. I just think he'll be like, look, Danny, these things happen. Don't do it again. Don't be a prick.
I hope
don't take the piss. Yeah. You're here to play.
He is a
We're giving
footballer.
You a lifeline. Your career's gonna go down the shitter, basically. If you mess this chance up, you know.
Okay.
I think he'll let him off, but time will tell, I suppose.
Yeah, just to wrap this one up, it says here there's no suggestion that Cahosi and Clare was involved in the attack or knew anything about it. Police weren't called to the incident and Drinkwater hasn't reported it to the police. Source said Danny is absolutely mortified now and realises he can no longer put himself in a position where these incidents happen, regardless of who is at fault.
Out of curiosity, before we move on, did you say this was a week ago this happened?
I don't think this happened at the weekend.
No,
I think this happened a couple of weeks ago and then he mysteriously wasn't involved in Burnley squad due to an ankle injury, which now we think is because he had his ankle stamped on by these thugs that attacked
him. What does this tell you about the people that are reporting this story as well? The fact that they've gone, well, international break, let's sit on this story for a week.
Well,
maybe.
I tell you what,
you've
got a point because Marley showed me a screenshot earlier of Ruben Loftus-Cheek's bank account somehow. that's been leaked onto Twitter somewhere.
Popped up on Twitter, yeah.
So news is often light during the international break, but certainly the media know what they're doing with that. This is Football Social Daily. Thanks very much for listening to the podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show because we do have shows every single day of the week, so you don't want to miss one. It's a really quick way to get all of your latest Premier League news. And if you've got an Amazon Alexa smart speaker, don't forget to ask it to open Sports Social because you can dive into our Amazon Alexa skill. It's really cool. It gives you a daily news update for your Premier League club, as well as giving you Premier League match reports and match previews too. So just ask Alexa to open Sports Social for that one. Time for a quick break now, but afterwards, we're going to be talking about captains. What makes a good captain these days after Scotland skipper Andy Robertson's comments about his team being a bag of nerves? We'll have more for you after this.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football Social Daily. Premier League updates.
Welcome back to Football Social Daily. Niall here alongside me in the studio. We've got Marley and we've got Jim. We've been talking about Danny Drinkwater and what's happened to him over the last couple of weeks. He was supposedly assaulted outside of a nightclub and we were talking about what Burnley and Chelsea do now. What about the responsibility of captains? Sean Dyche will have a responsibility as a manager to sort out the Drinkwater situation. But what about captains? Because the reason I ask is Scotland's Euro 2020 qualification campaign, not something we ever thought we'd be talking about on Football Social Daily, that's for sure. But it hangs by a thread. They lost 2-1 to Russia in their last qualification game. And Andy Robertson, of course, the Liverpool fullback, who's been so good for Liverpool, hasn't he? Andy Robertson, brilliant signing by Jurgen Klopp. He's the captain at the moment. And he was quite scathing of his teammates in their defeat, saying that they looked a bag of nerves, that when Russia scored their goal, it spooked the team. And he was quite visibly annoyed and irked after the game. And you always do get this level of emotion when you're interviewing a player after the game, because naturally, football is a game of passion and it's 90 minutes and you know, things are on the line and you can be frustrated. However, Charlie Mulgrew, who's another Scotland international, came out and said he didn't agree with his captain's comments and said he didn't think that they were a bag of nerves at all. So there's sort of a couple of conflicting opinions there, which you would expect between footballers. But was it slightly naive of Robertson to come out and say that maybe his teammates weren't good enough? Or should he be protecting his teammates? What's the role of a captain now in a football team? What makes a good football captain? Is it someone who's just straight down the line and says it how it is? Or is it someone who maybe is a little bit more cautious about what they say?
I think I like Robert's comments here, because I think as a fan, you want to see a reaction. You want to see an anger when your team has been beaten, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
So I quite like that from him. As for what the role from a captain is on the pitch, I don't know. It's a very difficult one, because people often talk about a lack of leaders now, don't they? Particularly in modern football. And the amount of times I've heard Manchester United fans go, we need a Roy Keane. We need a Roy Keane, a proper captain on the pitch. We need a Brian Robson, someone like that. Yeah. Those kind of players don't really exist anymore. So I think you've got there's different aspects to a captain's role, I guess. It partly is calling players out when they're not doing their job. Partly it's being a representative of the team to go to the manager and kind of be the person.
Like, snitch.
almost like a trades union head kind of thing. You're the person who approaches the boss and goes, this isn't right, or the players are unhappy about this.
Yeah.
It should be on the pitch. From my view, it should be the man who talks to the referee and the only person that talks to the referee through the entire game. And at the same time, you need to be the person who's the figurehead of your team and bond people together. So horses for courses, I guess, to a certain extent. It depends who your teammates are. Internationally, I think it's very different to Premier League as well, because internationally, those players don't necessarily need to get on all the time.
Does a captain actually mean anything apart from what you've just said? The fact that he wears an armband and he talks to the ref?
I think on the pitch, a captain is literally just an armband. If you don't have people that are talking and bollocking teammates and telling them everything, you know, that's going wrong, you know, you shouldn't be in that position, hold, cover me, blah, blah, blah. You need to have leaders in every department, at least one in every department. Mm. One in the defence, the goalie obviously won't shut up for 90 minutes. You need one in every position and you need leaders, and it's because of that that you're successful. If you have individual players not pulling the weight, you need players that are going to say, oh, you pull your finger out, you know what I mean?
And that armband thing has become a bit of a mockery, hasn't it? I mean, there was that England game a couple of years ago where I think 7 different players over the course of the match wore the armband as various substitutes happened. It was a friendly and it was just passed around.
Yeah.
But you're right, it's...
I think as a club captain, you know, for example, if you've got something going on the training pitch, you should have a senior guy who would go to the manager, like you said. But, you know, on the pitch, I don't think it's that important. But there is, you do need leaders in the dressing room to monitor everything and check everything's going right, because obviously a lot of things get said not behind the manager's back, but out of manager's earshot and things like that. So anything that's sort of bubbling underneath, you do need someone who can sort that out and have that sort of character.
You'd expect at international level there to be, as you say, several leaders on that pitch.
Yeah.
Maybe not so much at club level, but part of the characteristics that make people good footballers would be leadership qualities.
Yeah.
You'd imagine. So at international level, you'd expect those players would be all over the pitch.
Yeah, yeah.
At club level, maybe it's more important. I mean, I certainly...
At club level, I think it is, yeah. I mean, Newcastle had a perfect example of it when a couple of years ago when Rafa Benitez took over at the end of 2016. We had a captain, but it wasn't like a solid captain. And in pre-season, Jamal Lascelles just stepped up. He was 23 at the time, I think he was. And he was just, like, he was only new to the club. He'd only been there about 6 months. And he was bollocking everyone. And he was just that natural leader. And there was reports one time of there was a fight on the training pitch, and it was Lascelles had Mohamed Diame by a scruff of the neck, and he was like, wow, you need to pull your
brave man
weight, pal. Yeah, Diame's a big guy.
Yeah, he's massive.
Lascelles is even bigger. So it would have been like, you know, Tyson Fury and bloody Anthony Joshua going head to head on the training pitch. But since then, since he got it, literally got him by the throat, and he was like, look, you need to start pulling your weight. You need to be better than this. You need to give 100%. Diame was probably our best player since then. And so Lascelles just roughed him up a bit and was like, come on, you're not going to get away with pulling half your weight here. You're in our midfield. You need to be better. Yeah. And he was fantastic ever since.
From a West Ham point of view, and you see, Mark Noble is a bit of a figure of fun from some fan bases, and he isn't the most gifted footballer, technically, but...
Does that matter?
He's so important to that West Ham team on occasions. And you see him.
Yeah.
And when he's not there... And it's a flat game. There's no one to lift everyone up. And you see when there's a substandard performance and he's on the pitch, he's shouting at players, he's getting them up, he's causing, getting them to focus. And it lifts the crowd as well. When you can see a player on the pitch that is your leader, that is the person that's kind of pulling you through a game, it gets the crowd behind you as well. So it might be a bit of a figurehead, a bit of a kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Like a bit of an empty gesture, almost being a captain. But I still think it's got a role. So maybe it is that person who should be seen to G up a team, to drag them through, which is what a leader does at the end of the day.
Well, you said scruff of the neck, and you think of players like Steven Gerrard from, you know, 10 years ago when Liverpool weren't really a very good side at all, but he would just drag them single-handedly through games. And it was, you know, that was the
look at him in the Champions League final in 2005. He got him through that pretty much.
But no, going back to what Andy Robertson said, is there a difference between what players should be saying to the press and what they should be saying in the dressing room? If Andy Robertson's annoyed, and he's got a right to be annoyed, and I know sometimes it's hard to mask how you feel, he shouldn't be coming out to the press and saying everything's all rosy, but is he slightly making it more of a pressurised situation now by the comments he's made? Because if Scotland don't get a result in the next four qualifiers, they're not going to qualify.
It's case by case, though, isn't it?
I don't think they're going to qualify anyway, but is there a case for arguing Robertson, just go out and play the safe card out to the media, and when you get in the dressing room, that's when you're going to lay into your teammates?
Well, we don't know what conversations have been had in the dressing room before this.
Yeah.
It might be four games in and they've had a rollicking every single time, and there just doesn't seem to be any interest from the players that are playing for their country.
Yeah.
And actually, he's gone... I mean, look at Jose Mourinho. He famously used to do this.
He always used to protect his players, didn't he? Always.
Well, and then occasionally, Luke Shaw being a typical example.
United, it was different for some reason.
He just absolutely ball them out in front of the media.
Yeah.
So sometimes you need that. You need that little public shaming almost to get a response. And if he is feeling like he's been let down by his teammates for the last... four games or whatever it is, maybe he needs a little bit of public shaming. They want to ball him out in front of everyone so the fans know.
It's quite funny though. I remember...
I would assume as well, like, Scotland have been getting bollocked in the dressing room for a good fucking 10 years
by 10 different managers as well.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone's tried. Gordon Strachan's been there about 8 times. Walter Smith's been there about 20 times.
Alex McLeish,
Craig Levine, all these managers. I bet they've been getting bollocked for years and nothing's working because they're still not a very good side, basically. But if you do it to the media, then maybe it's going to have a bit more pressure, and I think it's good from Robertson because he's not throwing anyone under the bus. He's just said we weren't good enough.
No, he's not named names.
We looked nervous. He didn't come out and say McTominay is shite, did he? Like, you know what I mean? He's come out and said, look, we look nervous. We need to be better.
I do wonder if there's a bit of self-protection there as well. If you're the one...
He did admit that his performances weren't good enough and he's not been happy with his performances.
But if you're the one that's going up there and going, we've been rubbish, it kind of deflects off you a little bit, doesn't it? Because the fans are going, oh, well, you've been rubbish, but at least you know you're rubbish. You're kind of like, you're then on the fan side. So I wonder if there's a bit of protectionism there.
Yeah, maybe. But then again, no one's going to look at Scotland and go, we're going to drop Andy Robertson.
No.
Because one, he's the captain. Two, he's probably the best player, pound for pound best player. And he, you know, there's many worse players in Scotland scene than Robertson, but... Yeah, it could be a deflection tactic, I don't know.
And you're not going to get in the Euros anyway, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, and also, when you go from having Sadio Mane in front of you to, like, James Forrest, it's kind of hard.
Okay, the season's been underway for what? Getting on for a month now. So who's winning the season so far, lads? We've got the nominations, the Premier League nominations for Player of the Month, Manager of the Month. And who's the Team of the Month for you guys? It's easy to say City or Liverpool, but I think maybe we should cast our eye at some of the other teams. If you look at the players who are nominated for the August Player of the Month award, you've got Sergio Aguero, Ashley Barnes, Kevin De Bruyne, Roberto Firmino, Timu Pukki or Raheem Sterling. Those are the six players nominated. You can make a case for each of those players.
I think it's hard to look past Timu Pukki though, isn't it? Because he's been such a revelation coming into this league. No one was really expecting much. He's played four games, scored against three of those teams.
Yeah.
And he's just looking strong and 100% interested. I mean, it's just a shame that Norwich haven't really benefited from his goals yet because they're still languishing down in the relegation zone. But he has looked a revelation and he's looked strong and he's looked fast. So I think he'll walk off with that award.
Yeah, I would agree with Pukki, to be fair. He's got five in his last four for Finland. He's got five in his last four for Norwich. So 10-8 is not exactly bad. Finland nearly beat Italy at the weekend as well. They ended up losing 2-1 to a dodgy penalty, but Pukki won the penalty. Pukki scored the penalty, and he's done the rest in the Premier League. He scored a hat trick against Newcastle, obviously, and then he scored against Liverpool and Chelsea. So it's like, you know, you're going to score against the teams around you. You're going to fill your boots if this is the precedent he's set. He's going to fill his boots against the teams around him, like Newcastle. And he's going to nick goals against Liverpool and Chelsea if they switch off. So
Kevin De Bruyne has been exceptional as well, though. I don't want to move on from the conversation of saying Kevin De Bruyne, because I think he has been world class.
Kevin De Bruyne has been Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah.
That's what Kevin De Bruyne does.
He's been like an enhanced version of Kevin De Bruyne. Well, I don't ever remember him being... He was, that season a couple of years ago, he was phenomenal. And then last season was difficult for him with injuries and stuff.
I think
Pep brought him back too early. Don't want to say rushed him back because I'm not sure exactly what happened there, but he got injured again, didn't he? This season, for whatever reason, he's just started like an absolute freight train. He's been unbelievable.
I just think he is that good. And I think when he has a season, when he's fit and he's not coming back from injury, because any player who's been out for any elongated period of time takes a while to get back into the swing of things. He looked superb pre-season, and he's just carried on that. The name I'm slightly surprised to see in there is Aguero, actually.
Oof.
Because I
good
really,
start.
For his high standards, has he been any more exceptional than usual? Would you have put him in?
Well, you're just going to nominate him for every month.
would you put him in to get ahead of Raheem Sterling this season?
Well, they're both in. They're both Raheem Sterling. They're both in. There's three City
it's
players.
The whole City team it's, in there.
Sterling, De Bruyne and Aguero are all in the nomination for the August Player of the Month. So is Ashley Barnes, who started really well as well for Burnley. So there are some good players in there. Firmino's in there. We've not mentioned him. So
I don't think Firmino's been that good. Weirdly. Oh, shit. Went silent then. No one agreed.
I do. I'm just waiting for our resident Liverpool fan, Steve McNaughton, to smash through the glass of the studio and beat you up.
What you mean the Brazilian bloody jiu-jitsu champion who's going to chuck me out with his little finger? Yeah. Oh, shit. Yeah. Yeah, no, Firmino's been okay, but I don't think he's hit the heights, really, which is good for him because, like, there's more to come. Mm. And it's good for me because I'm not going to take him out of fantasy team now. So,
on that premise then, so we're going Timu Pukki first place. He's going to win the August Player of the Month, and then I'll vote for Kevin De Bruyne. So is that a 2-1 unanimous?
I think these awards tend to go with people who have done something a little bit special. And so in a way, Kevin De Bruyne has spoilt it for himself by just being good, because he's just being good again. So you need to be, but someone who's stepped up like Ashley Barnes, like Timu Pukki, I think they'll be nailed on for that kind of award.
Okay, interesting. Moving on to manager. So this is just a four-person shortlist for this one.
Steve Bruce?
Neither, you'll be surprised to learn, have made the shortlist. Brendan Rodgers, Jurgen Klopp, Roy Hodgson and Pep Guardiola. Who's winning your August Manager of the Month award in the Premier League?
Again, if you go on my theory of you need to actually kind of step up a little bit to win it, you need to do something a bit special above your normal standards. I mean, Jurgen Klopp and Pep Guardiola are doing what they always do. They're setting the league alight. It will be them come the end of the season vying for the title. Whoever wins the title will get manager of the year. Yeah. So I think Brendan Rodgers has got to win it.
No!
I think he's surprising a lot of people.
Big Roy.
At Leicester.
Big Roy Hodgson for me.
What?
Because we just wrote Crystal Palace. We all wrote Crystal Palace off.
And I still am.
Yeah.
We all wrote Crystal
they've
Palace
been
off.
Shit. I still think they've been a bit shit, even though somehow... they're fourth in the Premier League, fine. But, like, They got lucky against United because De Gea dropped one.
Yeah.
And then...
But you've still got to win the game. This is the thing. It's like on yesterday's podcast, We were talking about Harry Kane, 25 goals for England now. And he scored 6 goals in the World Cup, won the Golden Boot. And someone said, well, yeah, he had a bit of a shit World Cup. He scored 6 goals. What else do you want him to do?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's such a strange situation, you know, Crystal Palace, they've not been that good. No, but they're fourth in the Premier League. And we all thought they were going to go down. It's they've started early, so well.
I mean, it's too early
but
to
it's
judge.
August Manager of the Month Award. It's not Premier League
but
Manager.
How much of Crystal Palace's success has been down to Roy Hodgson's excellent management of that team? As he got exceptional performances out of anyone. They can't score goals. They just stick men behind the ball. It's ugly, turgid football. The Premier League want to award that, then fine, give it him. If you want to award something like a manager who I think is getting exceptional performances out of players that maybe are slightly below the level to what he's getting, who's playing exciting, free-flowing football, I think Brendan Rodgers has to win it.
I think that the first Manager of the Month award is the easiest one to give because it's whoever's at the top of the league. So I think Klopp will get it.
Okay.
For just because he's won 4 out of 4. And,
nine
you know,
goal
you
difference.
Can't,
yeah.
But I think Brendan Rodgers has done a better. Has been a better manager this first 4 games because he's got points at tough places. Mm-hmm. He's got a. What were the results? They had a. They drew with Chelsea. Was it?
Yeah. 1-1 with Chelsea after going a goal down.
Yeah. You know, they've looked good. They've beaten everyone else. I think they're third in the league, aren't
they?
They
beat Bournemouth 3-1 last time. 3-1
Bournemouth, 1-1 exactly. With was the EFL Cup with Newcastle. Beat Sheffield United 2-1. Chelsea 1-1. Drew 0-0 with Wolves.
Yeah, see, I think that's decent. That's bag. as good as anyone really. I think that's as good as Liverpool winning 4 games that you'd expect them to win. So even though I think Klopp will get it because you can't really argue with a 100% record, I think Brendan Rodgers has enjoyed the better start.
And I think he's proving himself to be a very decent manager again as well, isn't he? I mean, he was very unfairly criticised for his time at Liverpool, really, and he became a bit of a finger of fun.
He was a Gerrard slip away from winning the league, as they say.
He just turned into a meme at the end of his time, and it was like...
And no one really credited him for what he did at Celtic, because at the end of the day, if you're managing Celtic, you should win absolutely everything in Scotland. So here he's actually doing a job and proving himself.
Well, even 40... the Tunnocks Caramel Wafer Challenge
even
Cup.
Even the Tunnocks.
So, you know, you could also argue, I mean, I'm making a case for Roy Hodgson here, but Arsenal are also on 7 points, so are Everton, so are West Ham, exactly the same, 2 wins, 1 draw, 1 defeat. So, you know, really, I suppose I'm shooting my own argument down here, but I mean, why isn't Unai Emery in the nominations? Why isn't Marco Silva in the nominations? Why isn't Manuel Pellegrini in the nominations?
Well, because Arsenal, Everton and West Ham
are better than Crystal Palace. So Crystal Palace have done well to be in fourth.
Yeah, I'm not denying that in any way, but I just don't think you can give... I don't know.
So Brendan Rodgers for you, Jim.
Yes.
Marley, you're going to have to make a decision now between Jurgen Klopp or Brendan Rodgers.
Klopp will get it.
What I think or who I think should get it?
Who do you think should get it?
I think Brendan Rodgers should get it.
But you think Jurgen Klopp
will
get it?
But I think Klopp will,
He's shown a lot of character. Really good character.
Who the fuck was that meant to be?
Your generic Irish accent.
There has never been a more abrupt time to end the podcast than now. Thank you very much, Jim, and your terrible Brendan Rodgers alter ego. Thank you very much, Marley Anderson. I've been Niall McCorn. Thanks for listening to Football Social Daily. We'll be back tomorrow with another Premier League update, so make sure you subscribe so you never miss another episode.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.